Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Legal victory today for former President Donald Trump. The judge overseeing the election interference case against him and his co-defendants in Georgia has dismissed some of the charges, although, as NPR's Stephen Fowler reports, they could be refiled.
Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee has ruled prosecutors did not include enough detail in their charges, alleging Trump and several allies solicited elected officials to violate their oaths of office. Prosecutors say Trump, his former attorney and New York politician Rudy Giuliani, and others broke the law when they tried to get state lawmakers, the Speaker of the House, and the Secretary of State to change the outcome. But this ruling doesn't affect the larger racketeering allegations stemming from the failed push to overturn Georgia's 2020 election results, and prosecutors could refile the charges with more details. The news comes as the judge weighs whether to remove the Fulton DA's office from the case. Stephen Fowler, NPR News, Atlanta.
U.S. voters are preparing for another polarizing race to the White House now that Trump and President Biden have secured the number of delegates they needed to accept their party's presidential nominations. They're on opposing sides when it comes to the latest ultimatum facing TikTok. Today, the U.S. House overwhelmingly supported a bill under which the popular video sharing app will get banned in the U.S. if its Chinese parent company ByteDance does not agree to sell the company. As NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports, the legislation pits national security concerns against First Amendment rights.
Washington State GOP Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers, who backed the bill, said it gave TikTok's owner the choice to avoid a ban.
Separate from your parent company ByteDance, which is beholden to the CCP, and remain operational in the United States, or side with the CCP and face the consequences.
Opponents warned the legislation would harm content creators and small businesses. They say the bill violates the free speech rights of its more than 170 million users. The measure heads to the Senate, but it's unclear when lawmakers will act on it. President Biden said if Congress enacts a law, he will sign it. TikTok is likely to fight any ban in court. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
Lawmakers in the European Union have approved the bloc's Artificial Intelligence Act, viewed as the world's first comprehensive legislation on AI. Terry Schultz reports the rules and the agreement were 3 years in the making.
The European Union's AI Act is expected to get final approval from EU leaders in May. It will then be implemented over the next 2 years. It will ban some applications of artificial intelligence, such as manipulation of human behavior, and will regulate other uses, such as biometric identification systems, based on their potential risks and impact. If tech companies violate the new rules, they could be banned up to 7% of their annual global revenue.
That's Terry Schultz reporting. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 37 points to end the day at 39,043. You're listening to NPR News. Dozens of apparently orphan children have been evacuated from the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where the Israeli military is poised to launch a major offensive. The children were in the care of an international nonprofit organization whose staff and families have also been evacuated to the Israeli-occupied West Bank. More than a million Palestinian civilians are still sheltering in Rafah. For the nearly 4 million college students raising kids in the U.S., childcare can be a major barrier to finishing a degree. NPR's Alyssa Nadworny reports locating Head Start preschools on community college campuses could be one solution.
Research shows access to the kind of childcare Head Start provides can help student parents enroll, stay in, and graduate from college. But out of the thousands of community college campuses in the U.S., only about 100 have Head Start centers on site. Sarah Barnes, a student at San Antonio College, is one of the lucky who has a Head Start on her campus. Her son Samuel is enrolled.
It just makes life a little bit easier having childcare right on campus, so I can literally walk over here and check on him.
With a major childcare workforce shortage, the co-location can also give the college's education majors practical work experience in a classroom, offering a direct pipeline to work in Head Start centers. Alyssa Nadworny, NPR News.
U.S. stocks and the day mix. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 37 points at 39,043 before the close. The S&P was down 9 points, and the NASDAQ was off 87. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Langloth Foundation, supporting justice, equity, and opportunity for all people to foster and sustain safe and healthy communities. Learn more at langloth.org and the listeners who support this NPR station.
For KMXT News, I'm Davis Hovey. It's 12:06. Good afternoon. Kodiak's Pacific cod season closed last week for fishermen using pot gear in state-managed waters. The guideline harvest level for those gear users was about 2.8 million pounds, and the season lasted a little bit longer than usual, over 2 weeks. A total of 15 boats were registered to fish for Pacific cod with pots. The 7 boats that were more than 58 feet long were expected to finish emptying their pots on March 4th before midnight. The 8 vessels smaller than 58 feet were expected to finish their season by noon on March 5th. Pots were allowed to be in the water and open, but without bait, until yesterday. Now, any open pots in Kodiak waters must be less than 150 feet deep. Fishermen using jig gear still have most of their limit available for harvest, about 2.7 million pounds in state waters. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has awarded nearly $150 million in contracts to purchase Alaska salmon and pollock products from a handful of major seafood processors. KYUK reports the bulk of the contracts are going to purchase canned pink and red salmon, with the lion's share of around $68 million awarded to Seattle-based OBI Seafoods. A contract for roughly $33 million was awarded to Peter Pan Seafood, also based in Washington State. The USDA will also purchase roughly $48 million in pollock products from Canadian seafood company Highliner Foods and Massachusetts-based Channel Fish Processing. Alaska's congressional delegation has applauded the move. In January, state lawmakers sent a letter to the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture saying the purchases are, quote, badly needed to help stabilize market conditions and decrease inventories, end quote. While the salmon and pollock purchases have been characterized by some as a bailout, supporters like the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute say otherwise. Bruce Schockler, director of the Institute's Global Food Aid Program, recently told Seafood Source that the contracts are a result of a competitive bidding process and that, quote, the government is getting a great deal, end quote. Schockler also touted the fact that the salmon and pollock products are ultimately destined for key federal nutrition programs, which he says currently fail to provide adequate access to seafood products nationwide. In 2023, the USDA purchased a little more than $200 million worth of Alaska seafood products, also mostly salmon and pollock. The Alaska legislature rejected 8 executive orders issued by Governor Mike Dunleavy yesterday in a lengthy joint session. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has the details.
Maybe you've seen Schoolhouse Rock. The legislature writes bills and sends them to the governor for approval or veto. On this particular day, though, the process worked in reverse. Lawmakers were the ones pondering their veto power over a dozen executive orders issued by Governor Dunleavy. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, underscored the governor's historic use of executive power.
The legislature has never considered 12 executive orders during one floor session, as we will be doing today.
Dunleavy's 12 orders make up nearly 10% of the total number of executive orders issued since statehood. Most of his orders would have transferred the functions of various boards and commissions to the executive branch. The Alaska Constitution allows the governor to reorganize the executive branch to provide for efficient administration, but it also gives lawmakers a chance to vote them down, something they hadn't done in nearly 30 years. Lawmakers voted unanimously to uphold 2 of the governor's executive orders. They eliminate the Alaska Council on Emergency Medical Services and the Criminal Justice Information Advisory Board. The latter board hadn't met in years, one senator said. But lawmakers were far more skeptical of other orders. Representative Bryce Edmond, a Dillingham independent, urged lawmakers to reject an order that would have eliminated the management council that oversees Woodtickchick State Park in southwest Alaska. He said the council has been an integral part of the park since its inception in 1978.
The agreement back then with then Governor Hammond and his administration was that an independent advisory body would be set up to ensure that traditional hunting and fishing rights would be overseen and protected, and that there'd be a proper balance with sports fishing and recreators going into time. It's been around for 50 years. The park itself has worked beautifully.
The joint House and Senate voted to reject the order 38-21. Lawmakers then rejected another order that would have eliminated the Alaska Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve Advisory Board. And it was a similar story for an order that would have allowed Dunleavy to appoint all 9 members of the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. The board advises the administration on how to operate the ferry system. Currently, 4 members are appointed by the leaders of the House and Senate. The Dunleavy administration told lawmakers the board was dysfunctional and resisted department leadership. But Representative Louise Stutz, a Kodiak Republican who helped craft the board, argued a little discord can be a good thing.
This is a very successful board with a diverse group of board members with diverse ideas. This, to me, is exactly what we're looking for, a group of people that do not all think alike and are able to think outside the box and ask tough questions.
The feeling was not unanimous. Representative Kevin McCabe, a Big Lake Republican who chairs the House Transportation Committee, said he agreed the legislature should have some input on the future of the ferry system. But
I think that the governor deserves to have a board that supports his vision for the marine highway system. I don't think it's all that different from our vision.
Lawmakers ultimately rejected the reorganization. Lawmakers also rejected three orders that would have eliminated the regulatory boards for barbers and hairdressers, massage therapists, and midwives. Senator Jesse Bjorkman, a Nikiski Republican who chairs the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, said midwives had come out in force to oppose the order.
We heard about the desire from midwives for their profession to be regulated and have a board that represents them professionally in what those regulations are and what those folks are able to do.
The legislature also nixed a proposal that would have allowed the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game to craft regulations for, quote, the live capture, possession, transport, or release of native or exotic game or their eggs. That's currently the prerogative of the Board of Game. Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Lilikowski argued the board's years-long public process is essential to preventing invasive species from taking root in Alaska.
Again, I trust this commissioner will conduct a robust process, but I don't know who the future commissioner will be that will be running this process. And quite frankly, on decisions of this magnitude, I'd rather have a more dispersed decision-making process than the decision being made by one political appointee.
Lawmakers also rejected an order that would have split the boards of the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. The two state-run enterprises currently share a board. Though lawmakers said they're open to the idea, legislative attorneys raised concerns about the constitutionality of the executive action. Just four of Dunleavy's orders survived, the two mentioned earlier, plus one that eliminates the Alaska Safety Advisory Council, which holds an annual workplace safety conference, and lawmakers are allowing him to nix the Recreation Rivers Advisory Board. That provides input on management of rivers in the Susitna Valley. MATSU lawmakers offered nearly unanimous support for eliminating the board, which they said was standing in the way of development. In an interview shortly after the votes, Wilikowski said lawmakers considered all of the orders on their own merits, but there was something of a theme.
I think it's Alaskans being concerned about consolidation of power in one individual or one department, and I think really an appreciation of these checks and balances that we have in our governmental system.
Governor Dunleavy's press office had a different take. In a brief statement after the votes, the spokesperson said, quote, the purpose of the executive orders was to check the growth of government and improve efficiency, end quote, adding that the governor would continue to issue orders aimed at that goal. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
In other news, Alaska reached a settlement with CVS last week for the role the company played in the opioid crisis in the state. CVS settled the complaint and did not admit wrongdoing. Once the settlement is final, the state will receive $10 million over 10 years. The complaint alleges CVS did not thoroughly check whether opioid prescriptions were legitimate during the peak of the prescription crisis. According to the state's press release, over 7 years, starting in 2010, there were enough opioid prescriptions filled in the state to provide every Alaskan with over 400 pills. Here's Attorney General Treg Taylor in a pre-recorded statement.
That's a ridiculous number. And it is our belief that these numbers alone should have put these pharmacies and distributors on notice that there were way too many opioids flooding the Alaska market.
Between 1999 and 2014, opioid prescriptions in the country quadrupled. Over 200 Alaskans died of opioid overdose last year. Alaska is now dealing with a heroin and fentanyl crisis that emerged from the prescription opioid crisis. The state has also settled with other opioid manufacturers and distributors, including Johnson & Johnson, Walmart, and Walgreens. In total, the settlements will bring almost $100 million to the state over the next 15 years to be used for opioid addiction treatment and prevention. But that amount is tiny compared to the opioid epidemic's cost to the state. In a recent report, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority estimates that the opioid crisis cost Alaska about $400 million in just 1 year. That includes health costs and hidden costs like lost productivity. Governor Mike Dunleavy appointed an advisory council in 2021 to shape how to use money from the settlements. The council advised it should be used for programs that prevent addiction, reduce harm from addiction, and help people recover. The Last Great Race has its first six-time champion. Dallas CV has broken the all-time record for Iditarod Trail sled dog race wins, mushing to Nome on the Thousand Mile Trail and into the history books yesterday. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports.
CV and his 10-dog team, led by Golden Harness winners Sebastian and Arrow, arrived under the famed Burled Arch finish line at 5:16 p.m. Tuesday to a cheering crowd of onlookers enjoying a bright, sunshiny day. CV pumped his arms in the air, running beside his sled while coming into the finish chute, high-fiving fans along the edge. Their finishing time, 9 days, 2 hours, 16 minutes, and 8 seconds. That includes a 2-hour penalty race officials added to CV's mandatory 24-hour layover for failing to adequately gut a moose he shot after it attacked his team earlier in the race. CV was asked how he pulled off the historic 6th win.
One step at a time, the most important question, what does my team need right now? We answer that question every day, and at some point the analytical side said, holy cow, we have a shot.
This is CV's 14th attempt at the Iditarod, a race from which he has never scratched and often dominated. He hasn't finished outside the top 10 since his second effort in 2007. He's the youngest musher to ever win the Iditarod, notching his first victory in 2012 at just 25 years old. He then won the race in 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2021. In a press conference after the celebrations in the finish chute, which included an oversized check written out for $55,600, CV spoke to a crowded room at the Nome Mini Convention Center.
The heart and soul of this sport is sled dogs. It's spending your life with sled dogs. It's understanding sled dogs to such an infinite level that you can go do something really amazing with them and accomplish big tasks with them and goals with them.
This year was a bit slower compared to past Iditarods. A hefty dose of snow south of the Alaska Range put the damper on teams' speed early on. Later, it was cold, down to 45 below zero, requiring more attention to dog care and shelter at times. 3 Iditarod dogs have also died in the race, the first since 2019, when a dog died 2 days after crossing the finish line. The Iditarod said pathologists would be conducting further tests to determine the dog's cause of death. Iditarod CEO Rob Urbach addressed the dog deaths Tuesday in Nome.
We really have no idea yet the circumstances of what happened. I don't know what happened, so it won't be in vain. You know, if there's an opportunity for us to learn from that, we will.
CV said it had not just been a tough race, but a tough mushing season. 2 of his dogs, running in a team with another musher on the Denali Highway in November, died when a snow machine hit them. The moose in this year's race critically injured another dog who was expected to survive after 2 surgeries. CV said the experience caused him pain, but he didn't want it to prevent him from sharing the joy of traveling the trail with the rest of his team.
We have to choose to live. Otherwise, what? You curl up and hide in a corner and have no life and hope there's no risk? Life comes with risk if you want to live it. That's my thinking, at least.
CV had returned to the Iditarod in 2024 after a year off. And as for next year, he said he's still undecided, but not ruling it out. In Nome, at the end of the Iditarod Trail, I'm Casey Grove.
And for KMXT News, I'm Davis Ovey. Have a good afternoon.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
The European Union has approved comprehensive regulations for artificial intelligence. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. Deepfake images, video, and audio will need to be labeled as AI-generated. Some uses of the technology will be banned, such as emotion recognition systems in schools and workplaces. There are a host of other requirements, especially for generative AI uses considered high risk, such as in healthcare and banking. The rules are set to take effect later this year and could set a benchmark for countries elsewhere. A coalition of some 140 banks is calling on its members to start tracking carbon emissions associated with capital markets. For example, a bank would track emissions associated with a company that wants to make an initial public offering. The Net Zero Banking Alliance is backed by the United Nations. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
And here is your Island Messenger for Wednesday, March 13th, here on KMXT. The sun rose at 8:29 this morning and will set at 8:11 tonight. That gives us a total of 11 hours and 41 minutes of daylight across Kodiak Island, a gain of 5 minutes and 1 second since yesterday. The record high for this day was set in the year 2005 at 50 degrees. The record low was set in 1971 at 3 degrees below zero. Taking a look at the Kodiak Airport, currently the temperature outside is 25 degrees with light snow. Wind is northwest at 9 miles per hour. Visibility is at 9 miles. The forecast for around Kodiak Island today includes isolated snow showers before 2 p.m. Then it'll be mostly sunny with a high near 30 degrees. Northeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, isolated snow showers continue in the evening. Mostly cloudy with a low around 25 degrees. Light and variable wind becoming west 5 to 10 miles per hour after midnight. There is still a 20% chance of precipitation through the rest of today and tonight. Taking a look at the marine weather forecast, a synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters, a 982 millibar low 70 nautical miles southwest of Seward and its front, dissipate over Cook Inlet this afternoon. A 996 millibar North Pacific low moves to 50 nautical miles south of Cape Suckling tomorrow morning, then onshore at Yakutat tomorrow afternoon. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak today, west wind at 15 knots, seas 5 feet. Tonight, west wind at 20 knots, seas 5 feet, freezing spray. In Chiniak Bay today, north wind at 10 knots in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, variable wind less than 10 knots, becoming west at 10 knots after midnight, seas 2 feet. In Marmot Bay today, northwest wind at 10 knots, becoming variable less than 10 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, variable wind less than 10 knots, becoming west at 15 knots after midnight, seas 2 feet. And in the Shelikof Strait, a small craft advisory is in effect tomorrow. Today, though, southwest wind at 15 knots, seas 3 feet. And tonight, west wind at 20 knots, seas 4 feet, freezing spray. Taking a look at the tides in the Kodiak District, the next high tide will be at 5:09 p.m., at 7.99 feet. On the west side of the island, Larsen Bay, the next high tide will be at 5:39 p.m. at 13.84 feet. That's it for the almanac information. Let's get into community announcements. Kodiak Island Search and Rescue is offering a free avalanche safety class tonight, 7 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. Chris Bruno from Alaska Avalanche School will be making the presentation, and all are welcome. Anyone who spends time in the backcountry skiing, snowboarding, hiking should know the basics about avalanche safety. This class is free and open to all. Again, that's at 7 p.m. tonight at the Bayside Fire Hall. The state champion Kodiak Shakespeares will present their annual drama showcase this week at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Drama Pod. The five-time champs in drama will perform their dramatic and comedic pieces in this two-hour showcase of the best young actors and speakers in Alaska. You will laugh, you will cry, and you will be enlightened. This will be the public's only opportunity to watch the performances that earn the Shakespeares another state title. The first opportunity is tonight at 6:30 p.m. The second is on Friday, March 15th, also at 6:30 p.m. Tickets will be available at the door, and again, that's at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Drama Pod. The Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is hosting a community garden meeting tomorrow night from 5 to 6 p.m. That'll be at the KFRC building Touch Tank on Near Island. The address is 301 Research Court, and again, that's in the main meeting room. The community garden meeting will feature bed prepping methods, seed starting, garden planning, work party, and cleanup planning. If you have any questions or want more information, contact Ian Zacker at the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District. His number is 907-486-5574. At the Kodiak Public Library this week, lots of events going on. Today, this afternoon actually, at 3:30 p.m. is Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. On Friday, the library's video game club will meet at 3:30 p.m. That's for ages 13 and older. This Saturday is Pokemon Club at 1 p.m. Please bring your own card sets, and that's for patrons in grades 1st through 8th. And then coming up next week, the second annual FanCon returns March 22nd and 23rd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days at the library. There is something for everyone, from cosplay to video games, trivia, and more at FanCon. Stop in or call the library for specific times for panels and events. FanCon is free to the public, no registration is required, and it's open to all ages. Again, that's next week, the 22nd and 23rd at the Kodiak Public Library. And finally, they have an escape room open. Sessions are Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m., Tuesdays at 6 p.m., and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Patrons under 14 must be with an adult. For groups of 4 or less, you are welcome to book the escape room. You have to call or stop in the library to sign up. Join the Kodiak Arts Council for a meet-and-greet music event with Barbara Leica Quintet at the Islander Bookshop this Saturday at 8:15 p.m. There will also be a concert event on Sunday, which we have announcements about. Hopefully you've already heard that information. And after that concert event on Sunday, there will be a community outreach event with Barbara Leica on Monday, March 18th at 10:30 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. Barbara Leica, backed by her Juno-nominated band, will be showcasing her songs and stories behind them, followed by a 5 to 10-minute Q&A session. Both the meet-and-greet music event at the Islander Bookshop and the community outreach event at the library are free and open to all ages. For more information, go online to kodiakarts.org. The Kodiak Island Borough meeting schedule for this week includes a Planning and Zoning Commission work session tonight at Borough Assembly Chambers. That's at 6:30 p.m. Tomorrow night is an Assembly work session in Borough Assembly Chambers. That's at 6:30 p.m. Next Tuesday is a Solid Waste Contract Committee regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. That's at 1 p.m. Next Tuesday night is the Women's Bay Service Area Board Budget Public Hearing at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday. And also next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. is the Service Area Number 1 Board Budget Public Hearing Borough Assembly in the Borough Assembly Chambers. Next Wednesday night is Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting. And next Thursday night is Assembly regular meeting in Borough Assembly Chambers. All meetings are open to the public. Meeting packets are available online at the Kodiak Island Borough website. A Grief Recovery Method 8-Week Grief Group is meeting in Kodiak, hosted by Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak. This is an opportunity to learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss, while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable way. This will be done in an interactive and supportive environment with grief specialist Juliana Belden. Classes begin next week, March 21st, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Providence Medical Center. Pre-registration is required. Register online by going to www.hpck.org. You can also call 907-512-0600.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.